Welcome to the Fundraising Authority Podcast, where it's all about helping your nonprofit raise money to impact more lives. Now, here's your host, Joe Garecht.
Hi, and welcome to the Fundraising Authority Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Garecht. Today, I'm privileged to welcome fundraising superstar Claire Axelrad to the podcast. Claire is a certified fundraising executive, a consultant, an author, and a speaker who has spent over 30 years in the field raising money for nonprofit organizations. She's the founder of Clarification, a fundraising blog that was recently named the top fundraising consulting blog by Fundraising Success Magazine. Claire, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Joe. Now that you've called me a superstar, I feel like I have to leap over buildings in a single bound.
Well, I don't know about that, but I guess it does put a lot of pressure on this interview, right? It's got to be. But I know it is. I know it will be because I have been a longtime reader of your blog, and I know that what you have to say is very valuable. I love hearing what you have to say about fundraising. Tell us, how did you get into fundraising? How did you get involved with fundraising?
Well, like many people, I got lucky to find my way there. And I have to be very thankful to somebody somewhere in a corporate public affairs department. I don't remember who it was, but they showed me the path to what has turned out to be a really fulfilling career. I had been working as a lawyer. I was becoming very disillusioned. I was probably just in the wrong niche and the wrong job, but it seemed very procedural to me, and I wanted to change lives, and I just didn't have any idea how to do it or where to do it. So I began a process of sort of the what color is your parachute analysis of skills. These were skills that I enjoyed using, the ones that made me feel successful. And it turned out I found I love to analyze problems, I love to evaluate, and I love to make a persuasive case for support. So I started on a path of research interviews. I did about 200 of them. And at one point, I was speaking to someone in a corporate public affairs department from which they happened to do their corporate philanthropy. And while talking to him about my skills and my interests, he suddenly burst forth with, "You may be interested in the flip side of what we do." And I said, "Huh?" And he said, "You know, development." Well, I didn't know. I had never even heard of it. But fast forward several years, and somehow I managed to figure it out.
Well, that's great. I know I've told people on folks who have listened to the podcast before that that I didn't originally start out in nonprofit fundraising either. But it seems like so many people in our industry come at fundraising, from the corporate side or from the political side. Do you think having that background outside of the nonprofit world has helped or hurt you as you launched into your fundraising career?
Oh gosh, I don't know. It's pretty hard to see yourself from the outside looking in. I think, you know, it's always great to bring disciplines from other professions into the fundraising world. And I've always found that when I've gone to conferences and I hear a perspective from somebody perhaps in psychology or neuromarketing or something that is not just annual giving, major giving, I always find that very illuminating and helpful. So who knows, maybe.
Now, you've said in your writing and in your speaking, when I've heard you, speak, that most nonprofits don't put a proper emphasis on thanking donors, that they spend a lot of time acquiring donors, but not really enough time thanking them. How should nonprofits be thinking when it comes to thanking their donors?
Frankly, I believe it's the most important thing you can do, at least if you want repeat gifts. And the research shows that the average nonprofit in the United States loses 70% of donors after the first gift.
Wow.
I know. It's insane. And to make matters worse, the probability that a donor might make 5 consecutive gifts to you is only 10 to 15%. So those numbers just aren't sustainable for most organizations. By the time you've added a new donor, half of your previous new donors are out the door. So if you say that you can't afford to spend a lot of resources on a robust donor acknowledgement and stewardship program, I say, what? You can't afford not to. The real question you should be asking is, why am I spending a lot of resources on an acquisition program that creates a steady stream of donors that just come in and out, in and out? It's like your donor pyramid is sitting on a river, and it's not a particularly stable foundation on which to pin your ability to sustain your mission. So back to your question about how nonprofits should be thinking when it comes to thanking donors, I would say consider this. We human beings yearn to belong, to be part of a tribe. And when we give, we demonstrate that we're joining a community of like-minded folks who share our values. And that gift can be a one-time transaction, and the donee and the donor are both going to get something out of it. But it can also be a transformational gift, which is so much more. And for that to happen, it requires some work on the part of the recipient, on the part of the charity. And it begins with not simply sending a canned online receipt or a pro forma form thank you letter that spits out of your computer. You've got to be sending something meaningful, something to which you've given a little more thought and attention, something that makes the donor feel, and this is really important, makes the donor feel they're more important to you than they even thought they were. So it's something that makes them take notice and feel really good. And that's the something that may incline them to do it again.
I love that. The way you said to make them feel like they're more important than they even thought they were. I mean, it's what you're saying is that thanking is not, as so many nonprofits think, just something to check off on the list, right? Thanking,
exactly.
It's integral to what we do as fundraisers. Right?
Right, right.
So how is thanking, how is that process of thanking related to, you know, me as a nonprofit fundraiser, how is that related to my overall donor stewardship plan? You know, how is it related to how I interact and communicate and steward my donors?
It reminds me of A Sound of Music. Let's start at the very beginning. Very good place to start. The gift is the beginning of the relationship. It's not the end. So thanking is the beginning of stewardship. And rather than simply warehousing your donors in your database and treating them like wallets or ATMs, you've got to continue to engage your donors. And a great thank you program offers many opportunities to do this. You can tell them stories that demonstrate the impact of their philanthropy. You can ask them for their opinions, for their advice. People love to give advice. They love that you care about them enough to ask them. You can offer them opportunities to do other things with you that don't involve money, like sign a petition or volunteer or even share with their friends. One-time gifts might help you balance your annual ledgers. And you may get a gold sticker on your forehead because you brought those gifts in. But it's not really good for the organization over the long term. They're not going to move the needle on solving your overarching problem or achieving your ultimate vision over time. For that, you need to build relationships.
Excellent. And I can tell you, you are so far, I forget what episode of the Fundraising Authority podcast this is, you are our first singer on the podcast. Thank you for that. Exactly. Let's go to the beginning of the thanking process, which for most organizations obviously is that thank you letter. How fast should organizations be getting a thank you letter out the door?
48 hours. Now, I'm pretty dogmatic about that. I really don't want people to argue with me about that. And people will try to tell you that they don't care if they don't hear from charities for a week or a month or whatever. I just say, don't believe them. Penelope Burke, who wrote Donor-Centered Fundraising, has proved that donors care about promptness. And her now legendary research revealed three things that donors most cared about more than anything else, more than plaques or invitations to events or newsletters. They want a prompt thank you. They want it to be personal. And they want you to communicate the impact of their gift at least one other time before you ask for the next gift. So if you don't thank your donors promptly, if you think about it logically, you're kind of destroying all the rest of your hard work. A timely thank you is what gives the donor confidence that you received their gift. It gives them a positive first impression that the gift is going to be used immediately. It lets the donor know that they made a good decision and that you're efficient. And if it takes you over a month to process a donor's gift, you're also missing out on the most likely time that they will make another gift, because the most important predictor of likelihood to give again is recency. Mm-hmm. So timely follow-up matters a lot.
And I, you know, what I always say is, you know, to nonprofit fundraisers, think about, you know, holiday season, and if you were to send a very, very expensive gift to somebody, and then not hear from them for 4 weeks, you know, you would, first of all, you'd wonder if it got there. And second of all, you'd wonder if they liked it, if it was important to them, right? And so for donors, sending us their hard-earned money, no matter how much we know they support us, sending us their hard-earned money is like us sending our friend a very expensive gift. You know, we want to know it got there, and we want to know how important and what an impact it made on the person's life.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
And I know 48 hours, that will probably come as a surprise or a shock to many of our listeners, because I know I hear from nonprofits a lot when they'll say things like, oh, well, I'll say, how's your thank you letter process? And they'll say, oh, great, we've just got it to where we get them out the door within 10 days, or we've just got it to the point where we get them out within 2 weeks or even a week. And they'll feel really good about that, because previously it had been, you know, a batched job that they batched them and sent them out once a month. But you're saying 48 hours is the target that nonprofits should be shooting for.
Yeah. And I mean, really, it is a target. There's going to be times, especially at the end of the year when you get hopefully inundated with gifts, where it may stretch out to a week. But honestly, if you don't shoot for 48 hours, you're going to be getting them out in 3 weeks. So I say sit down with everybody in your organization who touches that letter with the check inside once it gets in the building, and figure out where that is going and how long it is sitting on people's desks. And maybe it's sitting in the post office too long. Maybe you should go pick that mail up instead of wait until 4 p.m. for it to be delivered. There's a whole lot of ways that you can speed up the process that often people don't think about. They just accept as, well, that's part of the system. That's when our mail arrives.
And right. So what you're telling them is if you nonprofits is, if you think about it, if you plan it out, it can be done.
Right.
Right. Now, you've said that every nonprofit should have a next gift strategy for donors. What do you mean by a next gift strategy, and how can an organization create one?
Okay. Well, next gift means, don't you want a next one? And what are you going to do about it? So, obviously, sending a form thank you and then nothing else until you ask again is not a good strategy. So, it really connotes the fact that you have a plan to renew and retain your donors. And really, the second gift should be one of the strongest objectives in your annual giving plan, because the second gift that you receive from a donor is often more important than the first, because it really shows a relationship is beginning to form. And there is some research that shows if a second gift is not received from a new donor within 2 to 4 months, the chances of receiving a gift will significantly drop. So again, this goes back to looking at your donors as friends, not ATMs, getting to know them, building a relationship with them. And just as what you just said, Joe, like if you send grandma a prompt personal thank you that tells her why that particular gift was just the thing, just what you wanted, then she's going to want to give some thought to what she'll give you the next time. And if you don't thank her, or if you just thank her perfunctorily and say, thanks, grandma, got the gift, she may not feel as thoughtful or as generously inclined towards you the next time. So we know donors have said they want some communication from you about the impact of their gift before they'll consider making the next one. They've told us that in Penelope Burke's research. So do it.
And so building a relationship is important. And then, and what I think I heard you say is, you know, so many nonprofits, when they're looking, when we think in terms of metrics and numbers that we look at, so many nonprofits, executive directors or boards are always looking at, you know, donor acquisition and did we get that first gift? What you're saying is that another metric that's just as important is the second gift. How many first-time donors do we get a second gift from?
Right. I mean, it's probably more important. I mean, we know in the for-profit world, companies find it to be much easier and less expensive to get a sale from an existing customer than a brand new customer. And the same thing is true with us. And it's just a shame to waste all that work that you put in to get that donor to make that first step of connecting with you, which is usually a test gift. You know, they make it. They don't really know that much about you at that point. They're kind of waiting to see, you know, what are they going to do for me? Because you remember, you always have to be thinking about what's in it for me. You have to be thinking from the perspective of the donor. If you just think, well, we're this wonderful organization and people should support us and it's good for them, it just doesn't work that way. That's not how human beings operate.
Right, right. Yeah, and thinking from, you know, thinking from the donor's perspective is just something that's hard to do when you're used to thinking from the organization's perspective, but once you get in the habit of it, it really can be transformative, obviously,
right,
for a nonprofit. Now, a lot of nonprofits are doing an increasing amount of solicitation online. How should donors, you know, I mean, how should organizations be thanking their donors who give online? Should be on the same way as donors who send in a physical check, or should we be doing something different with our online donors?
Well, I think that there's a lot of things you should do, but there's three main things that you should do that if you do these things, you're going to be ahead of the game. And one is, after the donor makes a gift, they should immediately be taken to a special landing page on your website that thanks them for their gift. And the page should be tailored to the campaign to which they responded. So if you just have one generic page for all purposes, it's going to end up looking exactly like one generic page. It's cold, it's impersonal, and it's irrelevant to the donor. The donor needs to be reassured that the gift that they just made is going to be used for the purpose for which they intended. And you might jazz it up with a compelling brief video that just makes them feel really great about what they just did. And if you want an example of a fabulous donation, post-donation landing page, take a look at Charity Waters' website. And then let's see, number two, they should get the automatically generated email response. And it's going to be a lot shorter than a mailed letter. But it should also include all the basic elements of a great thank you letter. And we're not talking about what those are in this conversation right now, but your software should allow you to send different emails tailored to different donor segments and to include personalized fields. At the very least, a salutation with their first name, the purpose that the gift was earmarked for and the amount of the gift. So don't just use the canned email that they have. And then number three, I feel pretty strongly about this. Follow up the email in the very near future with a letter. Otherwise, you end up treating your online and your offline donors as two separate classes. The people who just happen to send in a check, get a nice letter, maybe with handwriting, maybe a nice story, maybe some inserts, maybe a welcome package. And then the people who give online just get this kind of brief canned email. And that's just kind of a waste.
That's great, and I hope everybody's taking notes. I'm sitting here listening to you take notes. What you're saying is for online donors, a targeted thank you page that they should be taken to that's specific to the campaign they donated through, an email letter, an email response that's not just a canned response that's more personal than that, that's not just a template that came with your donation software. And then a physical letter or a physical welcome kit or whatever you're sending to your, you know, other donors, your offline donors, should also be sent to your online givers.
Exactly.
Where do you, now, you mentioned something interesting, and this is a question I've gotten from nonprofits, the idea of a welcome kit or welcome packet as opposed to just a letter. Even organizations that are doing a great job of sending out, you know, a one-sheet thank you letter, ask, well, should we really be doing like a welcome packet or some kind of something more? Are those effective? Are they effective for every organization? Who should be thinking about using a, you know, a more robust welcome package?
Well, I think everybody should be thinking about it. And you certainly can't say that anything is effective for everybody, which is why organizations should test things for themselves. And if you're thinking, you know, a welcome packet might be too labor intensive for us and we really can't afford it, I would say test it. Try, you know, divide your new donors randomly and send every other one or every fifth one even the welcome packet. And then over the course of the year, track and see, did those people renew at a higher percentage rate or a higher dollar rate than the people who didn't get it? And if they did, then roll it out to everybody the next year. But a welcome packet doesn't have to be a glossy, expensive sort of thing. It just is sort of a tailored recognition that you're a new donor. You're not going to get the same exact generic thank you letter that everybody else is getting. We know that you don't know a ton about us. So, you know, here's a one-page fact sheet. Maybe you've got some stories or some quotes from some of the people that you helped on the back just to sort of give them a flavor. And then you offer them some opportunities to be more involved. Maybe they don't know you've got a volunteer program. Maybe they don't know that they could be on a committee. Maybe they don't know that they could come in once a month for some kind of tour that you regularly hold. So you're just kind of giving them a sense of this is a hopping place. And then you give them a contact person, which is really important, so that they feel like, oh, I'm a donor here, and I have my person at this organization that I can talk to. They'll take my call.
Yeah, and that is so important, even for one-person organizations where there's only one person on staff. Having someone for donors to call, to email, to get in touch with, to know their name instead of searching around online trying to find a contact name, is a huge step in building a relationship. How can you build a relationship with, you know, a faceless organization? I always tell people, you don't build a relationship with an organization. You don't build a relationship with a business. You're building a relationship with a person at that organization, at that business. And so what you're saying is the thank you letter, the welcome packet is a great opportunity to introduce the donor to that person who should be their contact at the organization.
Right, right. And it also gets, you just got me thinking about one of my other subjects, which is that keeping fundraisers in their jobs for longer than a year or 18 months is super important because it really is all about relationship building. So these important things of donor relations with brand new donors, to keep them involved should not be thought of as so unimportant that we're going to delegate them to an intern or somebody who's here today, gone tomorrow, or the lowest level staff person who we know is planning to go back to school next year and get their graduate degree.
That's right. We're looking to build, you know, if not, I always say lifelong relationships, but we're building, looking to build long-term relationships with our donors. And we all know, I mean, we can't, certainly don't have the time to go into it on this podcast, but anyone who's read our site often knows that we talk a lot about all the reasons why lots of even seasoned fundraisers don't stay in their job. But it's so important to building, you know, to build long-term relationships between staff members and donors, you know, who hopefully both have a long-term vested interest in the organization. Now, you did mention testing, and that's something that I talk about a lot, you know, how organizations should be, whether it's things on the website, things on email, direct mail letters, testing, you know, testing and measuring to see what works and what doesn't. As you've gotten, I know you've gotten quite a reputation as someone who really knows about donor thanking, thank you letters, welcome packets, how to treat donors, you know, after they are acquired. I know you've come across lots of, you know, lots of organizations and seen what they're doing. What are some of the most creative ways that you've seen, you know, nonprofits building stronger relationships with donors through their thanking and their thanking process?
Okay, well, you're on one of my favorite subjects now, and I could go on and on on this, and I actually have a whole ebook on creative thank yous on my website, but some of the things that I'm just happening to love right now, I love Pinterest because it's so visual, and a lot of nonprofits are using it very well to put thank you videos up on Pinterest, and then they can, of course, also send these thank yous directly to their donors. They can link to social media, and you can go to that nonprofit's Pinterest board, and you'll see a series of thank you videos that give you sort of a window into various aspects of what they do. And because it's so visual, it speaks to people in a way that just reading a letter on paper doesn't do. So I think that's really exciting. But there's tons of other ways, and a lot of them are just really kind of old-fashioned, common sense, stuff that your mother would have told you to do. I used to bring cookies. I love to bake. So, you know, if somebody made a major gift or, you know, we closed a planned gift or something like that, I would bring them cookies. One year, I delivered Hamantaschen, which are little treats at Purim, and I was working for a Jewish social services organization. And they're little treats that you just develop and you leave on people's doorsteps. And I sort of went around town surreptitiously delivering these treats, and then people afterwards would call and go, Claire, were you here? Did you deliver it? That was so nice of you. And it was just really fun, just for me, too. And, you know, I have another friend who makes jam, and she brings jars of jam. I used to like to enclose stickers whenever donors had kids, or especially if the kid participated in the gift, if they had a lemonade stand and they sent the money they raised, or if it was just from their piggy bank. I would try to write a letter that was kid-friendly and gave them stickers. And it kind of made the kids want to encourage their parents to give again to this charity. I have one colleague who sometimes encloses a stick of gum for renewing donors and just writes, thanks for sticking with us. And it's, you know, it doesn't cost any more to mail because it's really, really lightweight. The other thing I love is personal videos. And again, Charity Water does a great job of this. If you go on their site or on their Pinterest board, you'll see that they will send personal videos to you, Joe. Thank you for this donation. You can also make personal videos with this tool I found called VSnap, and you can do it on Twitter. So you can send a personal little video to somebody on Twitter thanking them for something. And I haven't tried this, but John Hayden on his blog recently had a post on how to thank Facebook fans and donors, I think, using videos. So those are just a few of the things that I think are really fun to do, but I've got lots more ideas.
Well, and the strain that runs through all of them, and I'm sure everyone was kind of smiling when they heard what you were saying, but the strain that runs through all of them is they show the donor that they're worth more to the organization than just a form letter. You know, because all of them took time, even if it's just sticking stickers into the envelope, it shows that you know something about them, right? That they have a child or their child was involved. And it also shows that you're willing to take, even if it's a few more seconds, more than it takes just to fold up a letter and stick it in. It shows the donor that they're worth something to you as an organization.
Right. And again, it doesn't have to be expensive. In fact, it shouldn't be expensive. The most important word is thoughtful. It's the thought that counts. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you might be, you know, I mean, I like doing this in my personal life, too. If I'm out and about and I see something and I go, oh, that is the perfect gift for so-and-so. Well, I buy it and I give it to them then. And it's just sort of this is a just because gift. Mm-hmm. And those gifts are so much more appreciated than the because I have to gifts.
Right, right.
You know? So do that with your donors, too. Sometimes you'll be on vacation and you'll see something and it'll be like, oh, my God, this is like a plastic moose and my donor loves mooses and I'm going to get it. It's 37 cents, but they're going to love it.
Love it. I love this. It's great, great, great tips. And you're right. It's thoughtfulness, not expense, that really is the key here. Now, speaking of, you know, kind of personal touches, sending a thank you letter sounds much, much easier than making a thank you call. But some of what you've written, you say that for many donors, it may be worth it for the organization to actually pick up the phone to say thank you in addition to sending that personalized letter. What donors should get a real live thank you call from your organization?
Okay, so this is pretty simple, I think, because donors who are called give more next time. This is another thing that was proved by Penelope Burke's research. Board members called to thank donors within 24 hours of receiving the gift. The next time the donors were solicited, those who were called gave 39% more than the donors who didn't get called.
39%. That's a huge, that's not 2%. That's a lot.
No, and what's really powerful is that the power of that call was lasting because 14 months later, those who called were giving 42% more than the donors who didn't get calls. And I've seen some other studies, too, and this stuff is kind of fun for you to test, of whether donors who got a call from nobody, donors who got a call from a staff person, donors who got a call from a client who was helped, and which one of those calls drove the most increased giving. And in the study that I looked at, it was the one that got the call from the client. So, you know, you have to test it for your organization. Some folks recommend that volunteers, especially board members, make the call. And I think that can be beneficial in a number of ways, in that a lot of times board members are afraid to pick up the phone and ask for a gift. So this is sort of a way for them to dip their toes in the water and get used to talking to donors on the phone. And I would say 100% of the cases, really, when a donor has called to just say thank you, they've gotten off the phone just blown away by how good it made them feel, because the person on the other end of the line was blown away that all the person was doing was calling to thank them. But I also believe in getting thank yous out promptly. And I think folks are just as happy, in my experience, to receive a call from a staff member, mm-hmm. as long as the caller is authentic, doesn't sound like they're robotically checking a task off their to-do list, and will be warm and genuinely grateful. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
I happened to get a call yesterday from my alma mater, and it was a sophomore making the call. And I hate to say, but she did it all wrong. You know, she said, hello, is this Ms. Axelrad? Already I'm like, this is not someone who knows me. What are they trying to sell me? And then she says, I'm a sophomore at the university. And I said, yes. And she said, I'm calling to thank you for your gift last year. And I said, yes. That's all. Thank you for your gift. Well, she wasn't warm and friendly and open and obviously wanting to talk. And I think it was a missed opportunity because, you know, she probably could have engaged me a lot more. And, you know, I would have felt a lot better about the call. So, again, it's one of these cases of don't make it something where you just check it off your to-do list. So you asked me, who should you call? I would say if you're small, call everyone. I mean, you know, if you only have 200 or 300 donors, why not call every single one of them to thank them for their gift? And if not, if you're bigger, I like to call first-time donors of $100 or more, because $100 as a first-time gift is a signal that this is a person who you could maybe build a relationship. It's not just a token. I would call anyone who has upgraded their gift, who's increased their gift, and thank them, show them that I noticed that they increased their gift. And I would thank anyone who gave at over whatever your major gift threshold is. For a lot of organizations, that's $1,000. And you may want different people to call. You may be fine with a staff member calling the first-time donors of 100+. You may want your ED to call the donors of $1,000+. The other people that I consider calling are those who have reached a consecutive giving threshold, like they've just given for 5 years in a row or 10 years in a row. And you call and you congratulate them. And, you know, you recognize that this is a major deal to you and you appreciate it. The other group is if you have a monthly giving program, you should probably thank your monthly donors by phone at least once a year, because they tend to be getting kind of pro forma receipts, right, and they're on autopilot. But if you think about it, you'd like your monthly donors to upgrade their gifts as well, go from $10 a month to $20 a month or whatever. And then finally, you could do a random sampling of any other group. Like, I like to do a sampling of those who give between $2.50 and $9.99 and, you know, just like split them randomly and see if the ones that I call give more the next year than the ones that I didn't call.
Well, those are great tips. And I think, I can tell you, I have learned a ton, and it's funny looking back on, when I was a development director and executive director, some of the things that we just didn't do, and I love that you have cold hard facts, you know, data to support, this kind of thanking strategy that you've laid out. Where can our listeners find you online, and what upcoming projects are you working on?
Okay, well, you can find me. The best place is my website, which is clarification.com, and it's spelled with an I, like my name. So C-L-A-I-R-I-F-I-C-A-T-I-O-N, clarification. And I'd love to have you subscribe, because you'll get lots of tips for free. And on Twitter, I'm at Charity Clarity, also spelled with an I. And I'm also on Pinterest at Charity Clarity, and I have a lot of nonprofit boards and a lot of thank you boards that show creative ways that nonprofits are doing thank yous. I do a monthly column on Maximize Social Giving on social media for nonprofits. And you're going to find me doing some free webinars on Idea Encore and nonprofit webinars, which are both under the arching umbrella now of For Good, the number four and good. And watch for, I'm going to be doing an e-course on year-end giving with Mazarine Trays, the wild woman of fundraising, this month, in a couple weeks. So you can watch for that on my clarification blog. And I'm going to be doing a six-week e-course in January on major gift fundraising with Amy Eisenstein, who is a major gifts fundraising guru, and again with Mazarine. So those should be some good courses, and I hope you'll all join us. It'll be fun.
Great. Well, fantastic. Well, Claire, I want to thank you again for joining us today, And I do want to encourage everybody to check out Claire's blog at clarification.com. There'll be a link on our website on the post for this podcast to clarification.com. And remember, how and when you thank your donors is important. So make sure as you're, you know, doing your fundraising planning for this coming year that you have a thanking plan in place. As always, thank you for being with us today, and here's to your fundraising success.